making sure everything runs great as well. We'll be with you until 6 tonight. Chance right now to visit with our good buddy Adam Sparks. He's with the Tennessean, covering a lot of things these days. Adam, first of all, welcome back to the show, and hope your week has been going strong.
Hey, Johnny, how we doing?
We're good. All right, let's start first things first, Tennessee Titans. You know, last year at this time, we were talking about the Titans making it to the AFC Championship game with Kansas City, the only team standing in its way to go to the Super Bowl. We're not having that conversation this year. When you look at the Titans, first and foremost, biggest needs in the offseason?
Well, I mean, biggest needs first off is you got to figure out who you can keep under the salary cap. We don't know what the salary cap's going to be right now. A lot of the reporting you see is that it's going to be lower than projected earlier. Some of that has to do with lost revenue because of COVID. And so once we know what the salary cap's going to be, then you got to figure out what can the Titans keep. I mean, I know fans would like to keep Corey Davis and Jonnu Smith and some of the pieces on defense and all those tight ends, even aside from Jonnu Smith. But I don't think it's going to happen. I mean, I think Jonnu Smith is especially going to be an issue because that's a guy that's going to have a high market value. Corey Davis will probably have a higher value than maybe what Titans fans would think. But again, that depends on what other teams have, what room they have under the salary cap. It seems to be, this is not going to be like the purge of, you remember years and years ago when the Titans made a run and they basically had to have a wholesale of, almost all the assets that they had.
Well, yeah, every year they were having to renegotiate contracts and all that just to get under the salary cap.
Yeah, they're not going to have to do that to that extent. I still think they're, if not the favorite in the AFC South, certainly one of the top couple of teams in the AFC South next year. But I don't think it's likely that they have as much talent on this team next year as they do this year. Or they may have as much talent, but it's going to be, dispersed a little differently.
Well, the team that I would be concerned about in the AFC South, I understand Phillip Rivers, retired yesterday. I get that. But if they find their quarterback, I mean, they have so much money to spend, the Colts do, that, to me, they're in a perfect situation if they can just figure out who's going to lead their offense.
Yeah, and, I mean, the thing is the Titans are just going to have to be smart. They're going to have to be strategic. But last year this past season, they failed with a whole lot of what they did in the offseason. We can start with Clowney, but we can go on down the list. And there was failures in free agency. There were failures in the draft with Isaiah Wilson. And they survived that. They overcame those failures. It's going to catch up with them now because, anytime you get high draft picks or you get draft picks, period, rookies do not cost you. Rookie contracts do not cost you what they did years ago. So
right.
The way to win in the NFL now is you get the most out of your rookies the first 4 years and then you usually lose them if they do well. And, the Titans, that's catching up with them, and they're going to have to do really well in the draft this year and find some diamonds in the rough, especially with the second and third picks. And they're going to have to make it work because their talent that they have now is starting to cost them money. And once you have to hit a lot in free agency like that, you usually don't recoup it. You have to have a little bit more of a rebuild. And the Titans are not in rebuilding mode at all, but they're probably a year away if they don't stay near on top of the AFC South this year.
And the other thing, too, not only having to worry about the player personnel, also trying to figure out the coaching staff as well.
Yeah, I mean, so they had Matt LaFleur at OC and they had Arthur Smith, and you could say that Vrabel was 2 for 2 with his offensive coordinators. And to some extent, that's right because they both ended up being head coaches. But LaFleur actually didn't have it working when he was the OC. It was kind of just trending in the right direction. Ryan Tannehill's career turned around with Arthur Smith. Derrick Henry was a 1,000-yard rusher, but he wasn't a 2,000-yard rusher with Matt LaFleur. He did all that damage under Arthur Smith. This offense came together under Arthur Smith, and so it's not like you can just go out and find another play caller and make it work. That's a very important position they've got to figure out. And, you know, you were already going to have to deal with the deficiencies on defense. So I don't even know which is the bigger offseason moves right now. It's whether or not keeping the players under the salary cap, keeping the roster there, or it's hiring the coordinators. I would almost argue that it's the latter at this point.
On Monday, we get the announcement on Monday morning, Jeremy Pruitt out as head coach with Tennessee. And, oh, by the way, Phil Fulmer is announcing his retirement. I didn't buy into that as far as it was his idea. To me, I said it all along that he was forced out. But, you know, because here we are 3 days later, and now Danny White introducing him now as the new athletics director over in Knoxville. And then you decide, okay, we just brought Kevin Steele to be a part of that football coaching staff. So what does that mean? What direction will they go? You basically served up all of your issues as far as your violations to the NCAA. I don't know what this actually means for Tennessee in the near future.
Well, I mean, it shows you that, you know, there's you could probably write a book at the end of this of how campuses, universities are compartmentalized, for better or worse. You know, I think there's at least hints there that Philip Fulmer didn't exactly know what was happening until it happened, that being forcing him out and firing Jeremy Pruitt. You know, I don't, obviously Jeremy Pruitt's not going to know a whole lot about the investigation until it gets to him. So I think that was more late in the process. You had an AD now that's hired, Danny White, that, you know, my colleague Blake Topmeyer at the Knoxville News Sentinel, he reported that they only interviewed Danny White, nobody else. That was the only phone call they had. The only Zoom call they had was with him. So do we really think that, you know, Philip Fulmer's out the door and then they just make one call to Danny White and that's the guy? Or do we think maybe that was lined up beforehand?
You know, that's just like Phil Fulmer saying he decided to step down and retire after, oh, by the way, signing an extension last year. So I'm not buying that either. So at this point, right, whatever they say, I'm not buying any of it, honestly.
Yeah, and then they're paying him essentially the amount that you would pay him as if he were fired.
Right.
I mean, there's fired, and then there's fired, but we're going to make sure your legacy stays intact.
Because look, when I worked in athletics, I'm not making this up. The only thing I would have to do is change one word when a coach was being let go. They would have the option to either resign, or if not, they would be fired. And that would be the only thing that would change in the press release. Is he fired or is he resigning? Because I guess I'm saving face. I don't know. You still get paid. So I've never that was really the only thing. And sadly, that's just the way it works. So there was nothing about Monday I was buying into.
Yeah, I've got a similar story. Back when I covered MTSU, Boots Donnelly, the longtime athletic director,
right,
especially longtime coach at MTSU, from what I remember, he was told that, you know, you're going to resign today or you're going to be fired. He said, "Well, I'm not gonna resign," and he said, "You're gonna have to fire me." Well, by the time he got back to his office, 15 minutes later, there was already a release that said he resigned, even though he never resigned. So that's the way it works. Sometimes you're told you just resigned, and you say, "No, I didn't," and they say, "Yeah, yes, you did." You know,
yeah,
and that's kind of how it worked. I don't know if that's how it happened with Fulmer or not, but it seems to make a whole lot more sense than just him volunteering to retire at this moment.
I've said this, and I don't know. And look, you know, there's programs that all of a sudden don't win like they used to. And I use Alabama, perfect example. You know, they win a national championship in 92, and then you had to go all those years until 2009 when they won their next one. Well, just like, you know, Nick Saban told Mal Moore, the then and now the late Mal Moore, no. He didn't want the job. In fact, then they offered it to Rich Rodriguez. He took it, and then his wife kind of got into his ear, and he backed out of the job, but he got himself a nice pay raise for himself and his associates over there in West Virginia. But Mal Moore hops on a plane, uninvited, and he has to use his sales ability, and he started on Mrs. Saban, and Mrs. Saban won return to the college atmosphere, and the rest is history. My thing is with Tennessee, and I said this, you know, they're number 10. Top 10 as far as most wins in college football history, and the fact that they went with Derek Dooley, Butch Jones, Jeremy Pruitt, they forgot who they are. You know, they still have this great tradition. They still have a 100,000-plus stadium for football. They still have this incredible fan base, and they almost forget that they have all these things and they have the tradition to back it up. They need to remember who they are when they hire their next head coach.
Well, and, you know, that's going to come all down to the AD now. So, you know, you see the lists that have come out the last couple of days of possible
right.
Coaching candidates. Well, that changes all with the hiring of Danny White. So now two names that weren't necessarily on the initial list, I think, go on the list now. One's Josh Heupel, who had pretty good success at Central Florida, had, a 12 or 13 win season a couple of years ago. He's at Central Florida. He could follow Danny White now to Knoxville. You've got Lance Leopold, who I think should be right at the top of the conversation. That's the current coach at Buffalo. A lot of people wanted him to get the Vandy job. He had six national titles at a D3 school. Moved up to the MAC, has been MAC Coach of the Year two of the last 3 years. 17-4 in the MAC over the last three seasons. That's tough to do at Buffalo, but he's done it. He's going to get a big job somewhere. And he was hired at Buffalo a few years back by Danny White when he was the AD there. So that's another connection that, you know, could land him into Knoxville. The list got better once that Danny White was hired. So we'll see if it pays off.
I mean, I'd be told no by Bob Stoops. I would have a conversation with Gus Malzahn. I mean, one of the things that Gus Malzahn can at least bring to the table, and I've thrown this out there, he beat Alabama three times since 2013. Tennessee, when's the last time they beat Alabama? Exactly. He was able to beat Georgia twice. You know, here's Jeremy Pruitt, 0-9 against Bama, Georgia, and Florida. My point is this. You know, it's great. You know, you've got this up-and-coming, nice flavor of the month. But at some point, maybe it's a good idea to look for somebody who actually has success with a Power 5 conference.
Oh, I'm pro Gus Malzahn for that job because, everybody is, you know, well, not everybody, but a lot of UT fans have been infatuated with Hugh Freeze, right? Well, because Hugh Freeze beat Nick Saban. Well, he did it twice.
Yeah, but he cheated.
Three times.
He cheated.
Yeah, he cheated, and so he's off the table.
Not only did he cheat. Hey, here's the thing, though, Adam. Not only did he cheat. And look, I had him on my show. You know, the week that everything went down at SEC Media Days, he looked like he wanted to come over and get a hug from me. That's Hugh Freeze. But the bottom line is the fact that he cheated, and then he told everybody, "Hey, if you think we're cheating, you know, come and follow us around." Well, they did. It's just like Gary Hart, the politician back in the 80s. They followed him around and they found dirt. I mean, how stupid are you?
Monkey business. Remember that? That was
monkey business. That was the
that
was the boat. Yeah. That how smart is that? Follow me around if you think I'm cheating, and they get pictures with him on the boat, monkey business, with a girl in his lap. Yeah, that's really smart. Not Hugh Freeze, but Gary Hart, by the way, from the 80s.
On your bluff.
Yeah. And that's what Hugh Freeze did. No, but that's what Hugh Freeze did in Oxford. And it kind of sounds like to me. Well, I was going to say, it kind of sounds like me, Jeremy Pruitt, kind of thought that, you know, look, I can't just beat Nick Saban up and up. I'm going to have to find ways to bend the rules a little bit.
Yeah, and I mean, he's off the table, obviously. He was from the beginning. Hugh Freeze was. Malzahn, I think, should be on the table. I think this hiring of an AD takes Kevin Steele likely off the table. I mean, I'm sure he'll get an interview, but, you know, you're not bringing in an AD to keep the interim coach that you brought in a week ago. You're bringing in a new AD to go and flex his muscle and get the right coach. So, you know, Kevin Steele's got kind of a weird situation now, but, you know, that's fine. We won't shed any tears about him getting the money for the short time he's going to work there, most likely. But, there's a lot to sell in Knoxville, but they've got to go out and approach this search as if they are the school that they think they are.
Well, Lane Kiffin, here's Lane Kiffin. I understand he's Lane Kiffin's trying to get the job again. And my first thoughts are this. if you're a fan of Brady Bunch, you remember the episode where Marsha took a date with you know, just an average nice guy, right? But then the big man on campus wanted her to go out on to this dance, and so she told the average guy, you know, something suddenly came up. I mean, to me, that's Lane Kiffin. And so for look, Tennessee gets everything they deserve and worse if they decide to go back down that path with Lane Kiffin.
Yeah, I don't think that's the way to go, because there's always going to be another job to take, I feel like, with Lane Kiffin. I mean, they would win, I think, with Lane Kiffin, but, you know, you're in an NCAA investigation now. Well, Lane Kiffin's got some of that in his background. Do you really want to tempt fate by doing that?
He spent 1 year at UT, left them for USC. If he takes a job, gets offered and takes a job with Tennessee over in Knoxville, that means he takes the job at Ole Miss for 1 year and leaves them after 1 year. Do you really want that guy?
Yeah, and then what's the next one? What if Kirby Smart's out of Georgia in a couple of years? Does he then jump to Georgia? Nick Saban retires. Does he then jump to Alabama? I mean, you could do worse than Lane Kiffin, that's for sure. But UT should be able to do better than Lane Kiffin. I think
if they remember who, and I keep saying this, if they remember who they are, and not forgetting that, if they remember who they are, then yes, they can do better. But my problem is, I don't think they remember.
Well, I think the issue, too, is the coaches think they are that. I mean, you've got to have somebody say yes. And, the last search went terribly because they went around saying, hey, you know who we are. And coaches said, no, you're not that anymore. And, you know, that's important. And, you know, there's NCAA violations, so there will be some kind of sanctions. We don't know how big. There's going to be questions about leadership. Even though Danny White's coming in, he's a very reputable AD, there's still going to be, you know, some past there that right. will give coaching candidates a little pause about who's running the ship here. And so, you know, and the fact that they've had a few coaches and none of them can figure out how to win, coaching candidates are going to ask why that is. So there's some marks against them, that's for sure.
Well, and I go back to the fact that they had no previous coaching experience for a Power 5 conference team, and it's one thing to do like what Butch Jones did, you know, brought his nice motivational stuff from middle school to Knoxville. That worked out great. I go back to the original thought. You know, you have to get yourself somebody who has actually won at a Power 5 conference school. All right, Vanderbilt, Clark Lee, slowly but surely getting his staff together. You know, what's the latest, what's the feedback you're getting with the football program over at Vanderbilt?
Well, I mean, he just got his defensive coordinator from the Ravens. People that are fans of the Titans and Vanderbilt both, which there are plenty of those people, had to give a little bit of a bittersweet take on that. It's like, wait, that's the guy that just put us
right.
out of the playoffs, and now we're cheering for him. Okay. So, but Minter is his dad was the head coach, Rick Minter, at Cincinnati years ago for a long time.
Right.
Well-known coach, been around the college ranks, been in the NFL last, I think, 4 years. They still got to find an offensive coordinator. That's obviously going to be real important with Ken Seals, the quarterback, coming back, and a few other guys, too, that I think they can build off of. But, the staff is coming along. I'm curious to see how – I mean, I think one of the more undervalued hires they made is Barton Simmons, who ran 24/7, recruiting guru, has been on that side of things, and now he's going to be on this side of things.
And a friend to the show, too. He's just like you. He was a friend of the show.
And I mean, he knows the game. He just knows it from the other side. I think that's – I'm going to be interested to see if he can help them in recruiting. Now, how much he can help Vandy, we'll see. I mean, but if you can turn 3 stars into 3.5 stars or 3.5 stars into 4 stars – in terms of the prospects you're getting, that makes a lot of difference. If you coach those right, it can be the difference between a Derek Mason, 5 wins, and a James Franklin, 7-8 wins, and it's I've said many times before, at Vanderbilt, there's not much difference between 5-7 and 7-5. So any little edge that you can get makes a big difference about being a team that's routinely in bowl games. And James Franklin figured out how to do that. Clark Lee is not James Franklin. He'll have to do it his own way. But you know, bumping up recruiting, I think especially in-state, will help that.
By the way, there's always a Nashville connection. You mentioned the name Rick Mentor, former Cincinnati head coach, and among the other stops. L.C. Cole, former head coach at Tennessee State, took them to a number one ranking in 99. L.C. Cole was on Rick Mentor's staff there at Cincinnati, was also on Nick Saban's first coaching staff at Toledo in 1990 when Nick Saban became that was his first head coaching job. So there you go. There's always a connection with Nashville.
That's right. Well, as big as Nashville is right now, it's not hard to get. You don't have to go too far to find one.
All right, you're multitasking these days. For our listeners to keep up with all your coverage, what's the best thing for them to do?
Yeah, in print, the Tennessean, online, Tennessean.com, and on Twitter, at Adam Sparks.
Hey, Adam, we appreciate it. Have a great rest of the week. I know you're going to be busy, and we look forward to talking to you again next week.
All right, thanks, Johnny. We'll see you.
Thank you.